I mean, that guy and his Starbucks addiction, let's just say we saved half an hour a day not having to go to Starbucks.
Having coffee at whatever coffee place we decided to have coffee at.
Yeah.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 307, and it's been a while, and I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Ash. How you doing, man?
Good, man. It's a Scottless chat right now so far. You never know.
I know.
If a wild Scott will appear.
He might. He might appear during this call. I think we should kind of explain to our audience what the deal is, like, for real, because we always joke around like Scott's fallen in a well, or like, you know, the real deal is he moved across the country.
He fell in a well.
Oh. No. He's like baby Jessica from the 80s. No, Scott moved cross country for a really rad job that we kind of mentioned in the past. Mm-hmm. There's a big time difference between where we are on the East Coast and the West Coast. Not a huge time difference, but a sizable time difference.
A sizable one, and then you add family in and stuff, you know, and schedules get tight. It's a harder thing to schedule.
It's hard. And, you know, we work day jobs and have to wake up at a normal time. And so it's hard for us to find a time super late to record. So that's why it's been...
Even you and I, we can admit that, like, living in New York, your schedule's kind of shifted probably about an hour or two later than it was in, or not you, but my schedule has shifted an hour or two later than it was in Florida. So a lot of times I'm not like home and have had dinner and all that until like 8:30, 9 o'clock. And it's just, it makes for a difficult timing at times. So
it is, but we're still here. Know? We'll still make these forever and forever. So.
Yeah. It's not like we're relying on money for them. So yeah. We're fine.
So thank you guys for your patience, and you know, you'll get them as we make them. And thanks for hanging with us.
Hopefully you got enough PAX content that tided you over for a little bit. I know Ash and I had a blast. We haven't even talked since PAX, have we?
Not really. I mean, it's just kind of...
I mean, you and I have talked
here and there, but we haven't had a show since the PAX stuff, yeah.
Yeah, looking back, it is one of the more enjoyable PAXes I think I've had, which is a bummer to say because Scott wasn't there, but like...
Well, that's why. I mean, that guy and his Starbucks addiction. Let's just say we saved half an hour a day not having to go to Starbucks.
Having coffee at whatever coffee place we decided to have coffee at.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I had a really good time. We met some new friends, and it was a real, like, honestly, just like a... It was a nice change of pace for me, even like schedule wise. I haven't been like on quote unquote vacation, you know, really since Comic-Con. So it was just a really super fun trip, and I'm really glad we got to do it.
Yeah, I second that. You know, we said this, I think, on one of the shows, but every time we get to go and see like all that creativity in one place and meet new friends, and it's just a wonderful experience. And this, you know, this year was cool because I feel like we didn't plan too much. We just kind of winged it. And by this point, we've been doing them for so many years. It's just kind of like, oh, winging it was really fun this year because it was very stress-free.
Yeah.
We just kind of went back to the hotel at, you know, 11, 10, 11 o'clock, and then, you know, played video games and fell asleep. So it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, we played video games.
Or I did. I was playing some Overwatch on the hotel Wi-Fi.
I couldn't even hang out with my friend, guys. I just was sitting there. Sitting on my iPad, wasting time, you know, going like, well, I guess I was like a jilted lover waiting for Ash to come to bed with me.
That's exactly how my wife feels. I'm like, I'll be there in a couple hours. Anyway, so we'll talk, I guess, a little bit more about PAX near the end of the show, but sure. I'll do Scott's part, I guess.
Let's do the rundown.
On this week's show, we are going to do some Infinity War spoilers, but we're going to do it at the end. So if you're worried about Infinity War, which has been out for a couple weeks at this point, so you should have seen it. But if you haven't, we'll do some spoiler stuff at the end. We're going to be talking about Thanos coming to Fortnite. We're going to be talking about Obsidian's launch of Pillars of Eternity 2, Blizzard making skins for charity, a little game called Ducker Horse, which I'm excited to talk about. And then we're going to do some reviews of LEGO Marvel Super Heroes 2 Infinity War DLC, Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. Matt and I are going to talk a little bit more about Florence because Matt has dug into the game now. Yeah. And I'm going to do a hardware review of some Gunners, which I'm excited to actually talk about. And then, like I said, we will talk about Infinity War at the end, and I'm so excited to talk about it.
Yeah, it was a movie.
News.
So this was the thing that I thought was really exciting about this Thanos invading Fortnite. I dabble in Fortnite. I'm absolutely terrible at it. I'm so bad at it that it's more like for me an exercise in frustration.
So yeah. Should I play Fortnite or PUBG if I was to pick up one of these games? They're different games, right? Inherent. I mean, I know they're different games, but they're inherently different games.
I'm much more in the Fortnite camp for a variety of reasons. I think a lot of the stuff they're doing, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. Well, I guess we can talk about it now, but a lot of the things that they're doing are really, really genius. But I also think the mechanics in Fortnite are a lot more fun and forgiving. It's a lot less stressful of a game.
It looks like a lot more polished game, too.
It's very polished, and they've been building it for like...
I mean, yeah, we've talked about it for 3 years now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, I look back, and the first time we ever talked about Fortnite was 2012.
Yeah.
So the game has been in development, and that was...
Didn't they, like, say the word Fortnite at a PAX or something, and then, like, disappear into the night, and we never knew what was going on with it?
Well, that's pretty true. We, you were at this Comic-Con, I believe, but we went we went to a Fortnite panel at San Diego Comic-Con in 2012, and that's back when Cliff Bleszinski was actually on the Fortnite team, which is weird and interesting, but he was helping out with Fortnite, and they showed off some in-game stuff and said the game's coming, and then they kind of vanished, and of course they released it as a more of a defense, wave-based shooter. And then, of course, they modified it to rely heavily on like what PUBG was doing. And now this Thanos news is absolutely insane. So according to what Entertainment Weekly said, the Russo brothers were playing Fortnite in the editing suite while they were editing Infinity War. And the Russo brothers, like, the more I hear about these guys, I'm like, these guys are just the coolest guys. Like,
I don't know how they've held it together. I know we're going to talk about them later, but like, how they've held their shit together through all of this is mind blowing.
No, they're doing it like it's not a big deal. And I'm like, I get stressed out when I have to do like a conference call with two people. You know what I mean? I'm like, God.
I mean, these movies like broke Jon Favreau, broke Joss Whedon. Like these movies, like you saw directors who were just like, I don't want to do this anymore. These guys are just like, whatever, let's pump out another one.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So Russo brothers are playing Fortnite and they're like, oh, it would be really cool if we put Thanos in Fortnite. That'd be crazy. So they called Epic Games and they're like, hey, Epic Games, do you guys want to put Thanos in Fortnite? And Epic Games are like, sure, let's put Thanos in Fortnite. And so yesterday or the day before, they released this fully realized mode where the Infinity Gauntlet drops out of the sky and 100 players scramble to pick it up. If you pick it up, you become Thanos and you have a variety of his powers. And you're running around the Fortnite game as Thanos with the Infinity Gauntlet laying waste to people. And he can basically one-shot anybody with his powers. And so people are, you know, picking up guns and building forts to try and defend themselves against Thanos. And he's, like, flying around. It's fucking crazy, man. Yeah. And it looks beautiful. He looks like he's part of the game world. It's, like, a fully realized... It's not slapped together in any capacity. It's absolutely gorgeous looking. And I just thought this was crazy how it happened. I guess if you're working on the biggest movie ever made, you can call one of the biggest studios in the world and work something out, and it's not a huge deal, but I just thought it was great that these guys that directed the film were actually playing the game, and it was their idea. It wasn't it wasn't something that wasn't marketing guys.
That's always what you think it would be, is like three marketing guys and three other marketing guys that are like, oh hey, you know what'd be cool, bro, and they're like,
yeah, talking about revenue and numbers and all this, and this fun all, stuff. Yeah. When in reality, it's just the Russo brothers like, we just want to play as Thanos in your game. this is beautiful. So I thought that was really cool. And I just kind of wanted to briefly, while we're talking about Fortnite, talk just for a minute about some of the stuff. We were talking about this on Slack, but some of the stuff I think Fortnite's really doing right and why it's doing so well. I feel like their approach to community is really, really smart. They really want their community to play the game and have fun playing the game and support the hell out of their community, which I think is genius. But I also think their model for how they monetize the game is very, very smart. They have, and this has been talked about before, so this is not us breaking any news or saying anything that's really profound, but the way that they sell the game, the barrier to entry is nothing. It's free, and it's cross-platform on everything except for PlayStation to Xbox. They don't talk to each other, but you can play on an iOS device versus a PC, or a PC versus a PS4, or, you know, a PC versus an Xbox. That you can
still barely understand that.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So that's genius. But then how they sell it, it's completely free. But if you want a season pass, it costs you a little bit of money. The season pass gives you access to unlock that season's worth of cosmetic content. So dances and emotes and new skins and spray paints and things like that. You can only access if you have the season pass. So if you want to get all the cool stuff that makes you look cool and feel cool about yourself, you can. But if you just want to play the game, like, you can play the game for free. And it's like a very solid experience. I don't know. Like, I mean, they're making money hand over fist. I think they released that they made, I don't even remember exactly, but millions and millions of dollars just on the portable version in the first couple weeks that it was out, just on cosmetic stuff. But I think we're going to see a lot of other companies following this this season pass formula, which I just think is really, really smart. Well, anyway, that's cool. Thanos stuff is really, really cool. Everyone should check it out.
Yeah, that sounds ridiculous. Like, I couldn't imagine picking up the Infinity Gauntlet.
even if you don't download this game and play it, just watch. Go on Twitch. Everyone's streaming this constantly right now, so you can watch people run around as Thanos, and it's just ridiculous and super fun. So check it out. The other thing I wanted to talk about is Pillars of Eternity 2 came out. We did receive a review copy. I haven't had a chance to play it yet because things have been crazy busy. But I was nervously checking the Metacritic score for this game because a friend of the podcast who's co-hosted with us several times, Kate Dollarhide, worked on this game. And this was, you know, for me, I was really excited for her and super nervous for her because this is, you know, a huge deal. You work your whole life, get to work in games. And the meta reviews, it's doing super well. It's like above a 90% with over 100 reviews. So
huzzah!
Yeah, so congrats to Kate Dollarhide. The little bit that I did get to play at PAX was brilliant and super fun. I think they did a lot of things right. I did get to check out some footage of some of the stuff that Kate wrote. She's one of the writers on the game. And it's absolutely hilarious and 100% Kate. But she wrote the dialogue for a talking sentient sword.
Perfect.
But the sword is like super, super horny and talks about, like, you know, the calluses on people's hands and like the feel of the person's grip. It's just like super Kate Dollarhide. Really, really great. And then I found out the other day that the voice actor that voices the sword, because the game is 100% VO. Which is great. And they got the cast of Critical Role to voice some of the NPCs, which is just also insane. But one of the voices of the sentient sword is Allegra Clark, who's a longtime friend of the podcast. So it's weird how everything kind of comes together. And I love when, you know, great things happen to folks that we know. And so we will do a full review of Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire when I get a little bit deeper into the experience. Right now, I just kind of made my character and ran around, so I don't feel ready to talk about it quite yet. But I just want to say it's out. It's doing well. Everyone should pick it up. And always support your friends.
Yeah. Congrats to Kate. I think it's awesome. I'm looking forward to your full-fledged review.
Me too. I'm dying to get in there, so we'll see. I'm actually traveling for work next week, and I'm going to bring it with me on the laptop and play that.
Oh, do you game when you stay in hotels?
I do.
I've never noticed.
It's like the only time I have to game out is when I'm away from home. All right, so let's talk a little bit about, actually, speaking of supporting your friends, I want to talk about Ducker Horse. No, really, I want to know. I'm going to interview you about this, because where did this idea...
Does anybody even know? Hold on. Let's back up the truck. You're just going to interview me about Ducker Horse?
Yeah.
With no precursor as to what Ducker Horse is?
No, we'll get to that part. So
Okay. So go ahead. I'll let you
I
want
to know where the idea...
This is what it feels like to have a terrible interview. I'm sorry, everybody we've interviewed.
This is actually what I said to Kamina the other day on Twitter. I was like, I'm sorry that our interviews are terrible. She was getting interviewed by, like, you know, the Prime Minister of New Zealand or something like that. And I'm like, hey, did he ask you about pizza and fucking drop bears? But so Ducker Horse.
Yeah.
Where did the idea for Ducker Horse come from?
I work with a bunch of funny people at my work. And, we were
Olive Garden.
At Olive Garden. We were on our breaks, and we were talking about the old meme of 100 duck-sized horses versus one horse-sized duck, in which you would rather fight. And we were joking about that a whole bunch. We kept talking about it, and then somehow it boiled down to duck or horse, and we were joking about that, and I said, I buy a lot of dumb domain names, so I have a lot of them, like more than I care to admit. I canceled a bunch the other, like a few months ago, and I realized I saved myself, and this is real, I saved myself somewhere in the range of $200 to $300 a year by canceling domains. So, I've purchased a few. And I said, is there duckerhorse.com available, jokingly? So then we looked it up, and of course it's available. And then one of my coworkers was like, wait, can't you buy .horse domains? And I was like, what? And I looked it up, and you can buy .horse. So I bought duckor.horse. And then we all laughed. Well, I didn't buy it in front of them, actually. I jokingly said I would buy it, and then they left. And then, of course, I did buy it right after they left. And then I was like sitting that night, I saw the domain, and I was like, well, I'm going to do something for once with this domain. So I literally hacked together with like 20 lines of JavaScript this quote unquote game where there was a picture of a duck and a picture of a horse. You would click a button, it would roll through these joke sayings, and then it would choose either duck or horse and then report that back to you. And that's all it was originally. It was like a really, it did nothing. And then I shared it with work, and they laughed, and then I think I might have tweeted that version out, and then people started playing.
And how many people at this point have played?
Oh, like in unique individuals, I don't know, but there's been somewhere over like a couple thousand sessions, and like 30 going on 40,000 clicks on the button at this point.
It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
So of course, once I had that basic version, I thought, well, now it's here. I'm going to start doing things with it. So now, actually, when you go to the app, in case anybody goes to it now, duckor.horse is the domain. If you go to it, it's
we'll
actually
put a link
creating...
in the show notes. So
yeah, sure. The show notes. It's actually, now I know how that feels too. Oh, they never linked it. Now when you go, it actually in the background creates a user for you and saves that session, and you're actually it's all happening. There's a whole server and database running now that is doing all the math on everything and like controlling what your score is and what achievements you've gotten, because there's achievements, of course.
I just love how this keeps, it's like snowballing, and pretty soon there's going to be like a full like battle royale mode.
Here, for listeners of this podcast, I have a workboard for Ducker Horse.
Nice.
And here's the feature list. Currently in development right now, I'm adding unified accounts. So basically when you go to the page, you'll be able to kind of log into it with either your phone number or like your Google, like it'll text you and you can log in or whatever. And then you can go to any other device and log in with the same account. So that way you could be on your phone at work and duck or horsing, and like you can keep your score going and get all the achievements you want to get and such. So that's happening right now. And then a thing that's not surfaced yet, but that I did secretly in the background, is when you go to the page now, you get 10,000 duck coins and 10,000 horse coins. And then every time you click the button, you get another coin of whatever you win with. And you're going to be able to use these coins to buy hacks for the game, where you can either like speed round, which will let you play as much as you can in a minute, or you can tip the scales towards duck or horse, or you can double up the next hit, and you can even stack those on top of each other.
Oh man!
So you can start hacking the game while you're playing. You can set up little hacks and you buy those with coins. And then it's already technically in, but I don't think anyone can hit it yet. There's super duck or horse, mega duck or horse, and ultra duck or horse. And super is you'll get 10 instead of 1. Mega is 100 and ultra is 1,000 ducks or horses that you'll get whenever. And they're super rare, and the randomness gets higher the less they get hit, but they're not fully in yet, so nobody can hit it yet. And then, there's avatars. There's there's anime battles that we're going to do. I've talked to two artist friends that are going to probably do some illustrations. And Ash, you're the third one I'm going to talk to.
I'm ready.
There's hats and googly eyes. You're going to be able to bet your duck coins and horse coins against different like side and prop bets. So there's a bunch of shit going into this game.
This is amazing. So the website once again is duckor.horse. So duck or dot horse. Everyone go there. Let us know what you roll. Let us know on social media. And this is just a reminder that your dreams can come true and you can build whatever you want.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever made.
But I mean, here's the deal. Like, you and your buddies are laughing, so there's nothing better than that. Like, why the hell not, you know?
I mean, I think it's great because it's funny, and like, I just think it's funny, and it's just become like a meta joke on gaming, sort of. It's all the ridiculous crap I see when we go to PAX and all this stuff. Like, this is the feature list I created was literally just like, what feature list do games usually put together that are like overwrought, like things that everybody figures they have to do for some reason. And for me, it's just a big joke because all that's happening in the background is a coin flip, essentially. And I force it to take 5 seconds. It happens in like milliseconds. It's insanely fast, and I force it to take 5 seconds while you're watching it. But the last feature I was going to tell you about, which I think you're going to love, is that once I've added all this stuff in, once you're going to have all these different features and things you can do, you can hit a Zen mode button that'll hide all of it and take you all the way back down to just your scores for the duck or the horse and the button and the pictures of the duck or the horse. And that's it. It'll
wonderful.
Go all the way back down to plain mode that you had in the very beginning.
I love it how it is this sort of meta commentary on how ridiculously bloated like games are at this point.
Yeah.
With just like this feature and this feature. And it's like, nobody wants any of that.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. I love it. Good stuff.
Well, thanks for bringing it up, man. That's my fun little side project.
Absolutely. The last little bit of news we have is the fact that Blizzard just recently, I think it was 2 days ago on the 7th, they released a special skin that's only available for a few weeks. It's a legendary skin for the Mercy character in Overwatch. And the thing that they did that is, I think, really fantastic is 100% of the pros. Normally you cannot just buy individual skins in the game. They've never done it before. You have to buy, you know, random loot boxes and hope that you get the skin that you want. Well, this time they said, okay, well, you can buy the skin with real money. It costs $15. It's not cheap, but 100% of the proceeds go to breast cancer research. So it is it's a pink legendary skin for the Mercy character. They're going to be generating millions of dollars for breast cancer research through this promotion, which I think is really smart. And I think more countries
yeah
should follow suit and do things like this, because I mean it's 100% is fantastic, and the fact that the game is still being played.
Can they afford that though? I feel like that's
Blizzard
have enough money to donate that like that? Is that okay for them?
Laying on the sword, huh? No, I think I think it's super cool. I think
it's cool.
It's great. So just wanted to briefly mention that. And for our listeners, if you get it, let us know. We want to see it in action.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, let's take a quick 2-minute break for us, 0 minutes for them, and come back with some reviews.
Let's do it.
All right, so we are back with some reviews, and I have been playing the Lego Marvel Super Heroes 2 Infinity War DLC.
Cool. So I love the Lego games, man. I got no beef with the Lego games at all.
Me, I absolutely love them for a variety of reasons. One, the Marvel ones are nuts because this one has 271 unlockable characters. Which is like, how do you even, like, I probably played it, I don't know, I play it maybe an hour every couple of, I probably played it maybe 15 hours since I got it.
Can I ask an honest question that you may not have the answer to?
Yeah.
Does Marvel have, I think they do, and this might even be experience from when I was working there, if I remember correctly. Marvel has the rights to their characters for games, right? It's just movies where it's all effed up and all over the place.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it varies by studio, because I know I've also been playing that Strike Force game, and they put out an article about saying how challenging it was to get Wolverine into the Strike Force game, because right now they're being very, very, very... they don't like to use the X characters or any of the characters that are owned by Fox at this point in the games. And they actually, none of those characters, no Fantastic Four, X-Men at all, appear in Lego Marvel Super Heroes 2, which is just weird. Yeah, so no X characters and none from the Fantastic Four universe either, which is just very strange. But
Anyways, that's a side note. I just was wondering.
Yeah, so this if you haven't played the Lego games before, they're silly, but I think one thing that this particular version did right was the power sets for all 270 characters are all really amazing and fantastic. Like, you can play as Giant Man and grow into a super big Lego.
Oh, really?
Yeah, or you can turn, you can use Hulk and use like a super jump and fly across entire buildings. And there's this, the whole plot involves Kang kind of mixing a bunch of time periods together and then smushing them all into like one big world. And so you have like a medieval castle and pyramids, and you have like a 1950s Hydra city and all this cool stuff, and a giant map that you can explore with all your characters and run around and have fun. And you can switch between the characters at any time. And so they have characters, there's like DLC for the Runaways, there's all the Defenders, there's, you know, like all the Netflix stuff is in there too. So it's super, super fun. The Infinity War DLC, you play as Thanos and the Black Order. So you can download all those characters and run around as Ebony Maw and mind control people. And Thanos has the gauntlet and can do like 20 different things. Just tons and tons of fun. Very well voice acted. The plot line, like...
It's like actually voice acted?
Yeah, Gwenpool actually narrates the whole story. And then all the Lego pieces are actually voiced by different voice actors. So it has a massive voice cast.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's really, really cool.
Because I feel like the last Star Wars game I played, or Star Wars, the last Lego game I played was Star Wars. And I feel like, if I remember correctly, that wasn't voiced. It just was like sounds, like Sims kind of, where it was like, oh, like that kind of stuff.
It may have been. Now it is for sure. And they actually, like, it's like the puzzles are all really good, but they're very, very solid. And I also feel like the plot of the game is so fun, and they put these great combos of characters together. So for instance, it'll be like you'll play as the Guardians of the Galaxy, and they'll encounter Spider-Man and like White Tiger, and then they'll kind of mix teams up, so you'll have like Groot, and then it's a very fun, you know, very fun experience. And the actual narrative of the game, I feel like, is probably like a 10 to 15 hour experience.
Really?
For just like the story mode before you get in and unlock all the extra stuff. So it's a big, big game. All the DLC packs are super fun. And I definitely, if you're into the Lego stuff at all, check it out.
That's awesome. Yeah. I've always dug the Lego stuff. It's like you said, just got such a good, like, light sense of humor, sort of, you know, it's really fun. That's cool. So I picked up Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice for Xbox recently, mostly off the reviews and off some good hype, you know, leading up to the game, and sort of also partly off of what the subject matter is, which is mental health. So the crux of the game is you are Senua, who's this girl who is attempting to... Oh, man, I'm not far enough in the story to probably know fully what you're trying to save, but currently appears that you've lost either a lover or a family member, and you are attempting to reconnect with them And in the process, you're going through and facing all of these different Nordic gods. And the way you get to them is through sort of like dungeon crawling through their levels, through these series of puzzles. It's made by Ninja Theory. The game is, I mean, honestly, probably one of, if not the most gorgeous game I've played on Xbox yet. I can't imagine it running on an Xbox One X or whatever. I assume that is just insane. It's utterly gorgeous. I was playing, Melissa was watching, and Melissa continually argued with me that it wasn't CG, that different parts of the game were computer generated. And I was like, they absolutely are. And she was like, this looks unreal. Like it's, they've crossed over into just perfectly real looking settings and people and faces and animations. The voices are amazing. And I'm trying to figure out how to talk about the game without ruining too much, even from the beginning. I guess the beginning is, it happens right away. Essentially, she's sort of losing her mind. And the mechanic of the game is, every time you fail and die, this sort of like black poison crawls up your arm. And if it reaches your heart or head, then the game's over completely. Okay. You lose everything. You lose your place in the game. You lose every single thing that you've been doing, and you get booted all the way back to the beginning, and you have to start over.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it's brutal. It doesn't crawl too much. I've died three times in the first dungeon, and it didn't get all the way up my arm yet. So it's not like it's like quickly rising, but it's definitely there.
It's kind of terrifying.
The game itself fucks with your mental state in a weird way. It is not like triggering or terrible or anything like that, but it uses your surround sound to have voices talking to you while you're going through the game, and which that might sound sort of not commonplace, but having been done before, the way they do it is that it's actually interacting with what's going on in the moment. So it will constantly like doubt your motivations. It will tell you that you should turn around and give up. It will doubt the reality of what's going on in any moment. So it'll be like, that thing's not there. And it's all these whispering voices kind of layering over top of each other.
That sounds amazing.
And if you've ever dealt with, and this is a very, I mean, I don't mind admitting this, I'm not ashamed, and I'm happy to talk to anybody about it if they ever feel like they need to, but I've dealt with depression pretty heavily, both in myself and family members. And I've just never experienced a game that felt the way it feels like to deal with depression on a certain level. Because depression can be many things to many different people. For me, it was a lot of self-doubt and a lot of self, not flagellation, but like kind of like, you know, doubting and judging and beating yourself up over things that you either did or thought you could do or couldn't do, whatever it might be. And the way this game handles it, it was like the first time I've played a game that deals with depression or deals with, and I know there's some others out there that I haven't played that do similar, or not similar, but do deal with depression very well. But this is the first time I've played it on this kind of glossy scale and been like, holy shit, this is sort of what it sounds like. Like, this is sort of what it feels like when you're trying to do something and in the back of your head, you have this kind of just nag that won't let you go forward unchallenged, if that makes sense.
Wow, that's amazing. They were able to actually kind of capture that feeling, you know?
But it also feels like this could just be anxiety and depression and internal voices becoming external, essentially. And it's really well done. And so the sound design is amazing. The voice acting is amazing. The graphics are amazing. The fighting is really smooth, as you would expect with a Ninja Theory game. It's like, you know, just butter. They also don't tell you how to do any of the controls when you start. And then they tell you immediately that you're going to fail when you have to start. And it's crazy. And as you're playing it, it feels very real and it's fun and it's smooth and it plays well. But basically by the end of the first hook, story hook, you're really kind of realizing your motivations are personal and kind of like how you're moving through that world, if that makes sense. I don't know if that was a little rambly, but it's a really beautiful game. My only negative to it whatsoever is that, not you have to have a negative for a game, but this is a little bit, is that the dungeons themselves or the levels themselves can be a little repetitive. They do up the stakes every time you do a new puzzle. So you'll be kind of moving through this world in a different kind of puzzly way. The fire world, you have to like kind of constantly escape different scenarios where like everything's on fire around you essentially. And you only have so much time. And if you don't make it, then you fail. And if you fail, then you gain more of the black poison. And those can be a little bit kind of samey feeling as you're moving through them on occasion. And it can be a little like, cause I feel like you could probably finish this game a little quicker if that wasn't a little, too grindy, but otherwise it's wonderful. Like I have almost nothing negative to say about this game. It's a super interesting take for a big studio with like high polished games to do. Cause this is also a thing we were going to talk about. This is a $25, you know, 10 to 12 hour game, probably 10, 12 hours tops. It might be like five, honestly.
Wow. That's awesome.
So it's like a really concise story. It's really compact and you can feel kind of everything as you're moving through. And for all the complaints that I've had about open world games or about these kind of free to play, you know, war theaters, all that kind of stuff, this is like the polar opposite. It's a super tight narrative built around a very simple kind of system. And, for a price that makes sense, you know, like they didn't bloat it up to make it a $60 game. They just made a $25 narrative. So
that's awesome. Yeah. I've heard nothing but good things. She won all sorts of awards for her voice acting. I think she won the BAFTA this year as well.
Oh, really?
For voice acting. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I've heard really great stuff and I've always been a fan of Ninja Theory as well. So
honestly, the team that whoever the animators were behind her facial animations, like, should also be winning awards left and right. It really is like they did a real number here for this. It's pretty incredible. So
that's awesome. Well, I'm glad it's good, man.
Yeah.
Good stuff. You want to talk some more about Florence? Let's do it.
Well, so I didn't really get to talk about it. I played very coy on the interview and just kind of hung out, but I had not played Florence. I had downloaded it, but not played it yet before we got to talk to Kamina. So I played it today. So this is very fresh in my brain, but I played it on a train home and I actually tweeted her and said, hey, you and your studio almost made me cry on a subway on my way home because this game is beautiful. So the game's called Florence. It's on iOS. It's on Android too, right?
Yeah, it is.
And it's a relationship sim, I guess, be the best way to put it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a interactive story, but there are puzzle elements to it, I guess basic puzzle elements to it. So it's very unique. But I want to kind of hear just a little bit, without spoiling too much of the narrative, because that's the kind of the trouble I was having during the interview. How would you kind of describe what the experience is like for someone that might want to pick up Florence?
So the story is, man, what is a good way to put it? I guess the way I would put it is is this spoilery? I'm going to say this, and if it's spoilery, say it's spoilery, and we'll edit it out. How's that sound?
That sounds fine.
This is a really great version of your first real relationship.
No, I think that's a great way of putting it. Exactly. I felt the exact same way. Like this was almost a spinning image of how it feels to go through your first real relationship.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think the highest notes I can give this game are that it A, feels very real and played very real while I was playing it, but also that the music design around the games, which is the majority of the audio is music that kind of changes as you're playing, and the mechanics around how you navigate through this story are really nice and like, I don't know, they play to the emotional heights well, whatever the emotion might be, love or anger or sadness, or I mean, it kind of runs the gamut as you're going through the story. Everything fits just kind of perfectly. You're like, this feels the way it feels. And I don't think this is spoilery either, but there are no real words in this game. I think short of your conversations with your mother, there's no actual text.
I don't even think I realized that, but yeah, it was something I briefly touched on in the interview. Like, a lot of the conversations are done through facial expressions and then kind of puzzles to indicate how the conversation is going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really smart. I think a lot of the stuff in the game was very innovative, which is why I think it's getting, you know, so much praise. And the fact that it is a digestible, you know, 60-minute experience, yeah, if not less, I think that's great. I think we need more games like that.
Yeah, I did it on it's probably right around an hour train ride home. The trains were screwed today. Spoiler alert, they're always screwed. But it took me an hour to get home, but I played through the entirety of the game on my way home, which is, it was so unique. And like, I've just never, it's crazy to think a game in an hour can take you through such a wide range of emotions and you feel them. Like, I really felt everything as I was playing this game. It really attached to me in a way that I could personalize what was going on. And, you know, like, I'm a 37-year-old dude and I was playing as a 25-year-old lady, and like, it was fine. Like, the core of the story was so relatable on, I think, to, I really feel like, to most people, that like, it just was really beautiful and just wonderful to play. And like, it's one of those things where, like, it's like when you watch a really poignant dramatic movie and you finish it and you're like, wow, that made me really sad, but I'm glad I experienced it, you know? Like,
right.
or that made me so angry, but I'm glad I experienced it, you know? Like, that's what that game, which I don't think it happens in a lot of games, that's what Florence really did for me. I walked away thinking that I felt everything, really, honestly, and I'm so glad I got to go through that, you know? Like, it was such a good experience. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think it, in a lot of ways, it kind of shows that a lot of people go through the same thing. Mm-hmm. So like, the fact that there's a game that exists about this relationship and how hard and challenging they can be, it's like, oh, well, the fact that this game exists and other people made it kind of proves that I'm not the only one who has felt this way, and how kind of overwhelming it all can be. It's turning into a serious episode.
I know, yeah. Really? And not even, well, I was going to lighten it a little, not even how hard and challenging they can be, but like, there's a moment that I will sort of spoil in this game where you are unveiling Polaroids of things you did with your boyfriend. And it was two things went through my brain. One was like, this is such a happy, like, fun moment in this game where I'm like enjoying seeing the things that they did together, you know, like,
right.
And I'm like, oh, that's so cool. And then at the same time in my head, I was like, man, I wish I had done this like with Melissa. Like, why don't I have a map of the things we did around the city?
You know,
like,
I know.
Like,
very
what
smart,
a great
right?
idea. Like, so yeah, the game's not all, it's not all heavy and
no,
sad.
No, it's good.
And
it's so pretty and so polished. Yeah. It feels like you know, you're kind of experiencing you're really playing a little piece of art, which is again, why I think it's doing so well and why a lot of people like it. Cause it is it's a unique experience for a mobile device. That's for sure.
Absolutely. So go and play with your headphones on, by the way, but go get it. It's Florence. It's on App Store and in the Play Store. So pick it up and play it. It's really, really wonderful. And everybody should.
And then go listen to episode 306 of this podcast.
Because Kamina is awesome. Yeah. She's so great. I like talking to her a whole lot. So.
She is funny. And we'll have her back.
We will.
I just know it. So we don't do a ton of hardware reviews, but every once in a while we will get contacted by people that make some form of hardware, and they ask us to check stuff out, which is awesome, and it really incredible when that happens. But Gunnar reached out and asked if we wanted to try out a new pair of the new Workplay glasses. And for me, I actually had been thinking about getting a pair of Gunners for a while because I work in front of the computer pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
And eye strain happens to me. And back when I was teaching, I would get migraine headaches from the overhead lights. And so I had to get these glasses that I wore all the time that protected me from the headaches. And I hadn't been wearing them at my current job. And Gunnar has these, you know, these special lenses that protect you from the UV lights and the lights that can hurt your eyes. But these new Workplay glasses are pretty fantastic. They actually function as indoor glasses for gaming and for eye strain. So if you're working on the computer or if you play a lot of games, they kind of, you know, make your eyes less tired, which is freaking awesome. And if you go outside, they kind of get a little bit of tint on them and become sunglasses. So I actually wore them to Disney the other day. I took my little guy to Disney for his birthday, which was great. And happy I wore birthday, these as, yeah, happy birthday, buddy. When you listen to this, when you're old, wow, he's talking about sunglasses. But so I wore these as my sunglasses, and it was awesome. No eye strain all day. It was like 90 degrees out in the Florida heat, and like my eyes felt great. And I know it sounds like I'm plugging these, but I genuinely have been wearing them all the time. They feel great. They look super cool. They just look like, you know, like kind of like cool Buddy Holly glasses. There's a bunch of different frames you can get. And these lenses are brand new, so it's called Workplay Lens Technology. It's at Gunner Optics. Definitely check it out.
Very cool.
Yeah, the frames I got were the Enigma frames, which are kind of like, you know, slightly curvy Buddy Holly-esque frames, which I think look super, super nice. But yeah, they're great. I definitely stand by these guys, and thanks for sending them our way.
I've thought about them for the same reason, because I get eye strain on occasion. I too am in front of computers all day long, and I have thought, oh man, I should probably look into taking care of my eyeballs.
So. Yeah, it, like, I'm no bullshit. Like, since I've been wearing these at work, I have not gotten any headaches from my screens.
Awesome.
So I don't know. I mean, there's definitely some sort of correlation.
Yeah.
I think these are pretty cool. So.
Very cool.
Check them out.
Will do.
We're to the part that I've been so excited to talk about. We're going to talk about Infinity War, Avengers.
It's true. And if you have not seen it, like, good on you. I don't know. That's a challenge, I feel like.
Yeah.
And B, either listen and get spoiled, or, you know, we'll see you next time. And
thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. So, because we are going to spoil Infinity War, Avengers Infinity War, the giant billion-dollar breaking movie, biggest movie of all time at this point. And we're going to do that now, right?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. That's your warning. Turn this off. If you have not heard it yet, turn it off.
Turn it off. I will start by saying, God, I loved this movie. And
yeah.
I'm so glad that I did. I was so nervous that I was going to go in and there was going to be all this hype. And this will happen to me. Every once in a while, I'll get so hyped for a movie and I'll leave and I'll just feel kind of deflated. Like, you know, what I had built up in my head wasn't going to be, you know, what it would never live up to what I built up in my head. But this was better than I was anticipating, which is just a great thing to say.
Yeah, I actually wasn't going into it with doubts, only because, as we mentioned before, the Russo brothers seem super into this still. And there were no, like, you know, when a movie's not going well in production and post-production, we hear generally nowadays. Nowadays, you kind of know, because directors get swapped. People have frustrations. There's article after article posted about how, you know, different people are barely even involved anymore. And none of that happened with this movie. And I was just like, and everybody seemed happy and all the promotional videos was all very fun. And I was like, man, they seem to still be enjoying doing these giant movies, which I think takes a special breed. So I wasn't as concerned, because I also thought Civil War was great. And
I did too.
They helped that as well. So I went into it with less trepidation, but I too came out of it and thought, man, what a just good movie. Like, what a fun, good movie, regardless of, you know, happy, sad, different parts of it. I just was like, what a cool, what a well done take on a thing that all of us should not expect to work, which is 68 main characters or whatever the fucking list was.
It was a whole lot. Right, right. And there have been complaints. Some people feel like this particular film doesn't really have an arc, and that there was no character development. And you know, of course, my argument and everyone else's argument is like, hey, you've had 10 years of character development.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck? I've been seeing all these, like, you know, think pieces where we have to take Infinity War down a peg or two. Yeah. And, like, that's fine. I get it. Everybody's got to write articles. People have opinions. And you're welcome to not like this movie if you don't want to. But, like, at the same time, like, what are we complaining about anymore? Like, this, A, we knew going in this was going to be half of an arc. Like, we knew it. It's the same as Harry Potter 7 and 7.1 or whatever. Like, this, we knew this was a movie broken into two parts, and we should have been fully aware that that's what was going to happen. And that was, I think, the number one complaint I heard from people that saw it, which was the movie ends. We've already warned everybody enough. The movie ends with Thanos winning, essentially, and no real resolution of any sort. It basically felt like the major conflict happened in the third act, and then they were just like, okay. And then we were all like, wait, what? Like, but I think that's absolutely intended on their part. Like, they know we're going to come back for the next one.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And
they'll be
and
ready.
This is, yeah. And this is like, this is fully intended. And what I really loved about it was it made me go like, oh shit, what movies are between this one and the next one? And there's only two. It's Ant-Man and the Wasp. And then,
Captain Marvel,
and then Avengers is back right after that. So part of me is like even cooler with it because I know that I don't have to wait 3 years until the next Avengers movie to see what they're going to come back together for again. Like, this is what I wanted. I wanted a big villain that's actually hard or impossible to beat. That's the challenge that Marvel has had this entire time is every villain is like, A, paper thin, and B, immediately beatable. You know, like, I rewatched the first Guardians recently and loved it. It's still a very fun movie, but like that character of
Ronan
is like in the comics, he's like hella powerful. Hella, Jesus, he's very powerful.
It's all right, man.
Oh boy,
we can use some hella, man. It's all right.
He's really powerful, and like they essentially just kind of beat him. Like, they don't meet him until the very end. And then when they meet him, they're like, and he's done. And you're like, well, okay.
And he had an Infinity Stone, too.
Yeah. It was just done. Just ended. Just no problem. You know, just took him out. So it's like this. I was ready for this. I was prepared to have the ending not be an ending. And I know the other complaint is like, oh, well, they're just going to come back and fix it all in the next one. It's like, of course they are. This is
right.
Yeah.
But you know, there's going to be lasting casualties because of you know, everything that we know, like, you know, Downey Jr. contract being up Chris Evans contract being up and like all those things behind the scenes that we as fans are aware of at this point that maybe the general movie going population isn't aware of, but, you know, we kind of can guess who's going to come back and who's not going to come back. So, I want to ask real quick about your favorite parts of favorite either fights or just favorite things overall. It's a big movie to talk about. I mean, we could conceivably do have a 3-hour conversation about it, but let's just talk about favorites.
I loved the handling. This is going to be a weird favorite. It's vague in sense, but I loved the handling of the kind of mini teams. I enjoyed that they broke everybody up essentially early on in the movie. Essentially, it was like that it started and it just everybody was in like 4 different places. But I enjoyed that because it made for a bunch of little mini stories that were good to follow. And then when those moments happened that they came together, it was like that cathartic, you know, Hulk slamming Loki around or Groot slamming the weird aliens around, or, you know, like those moments felt so much bigger in essence because Captain America would just come flying in out of nowhere.
Oh, and the first time Cap appears with a train. It's just like that to me, I totally got like catharsis bumps all over me. I was just like,
when Thor reappears at the final battle,
holy crap.
They got like 4 of those moments out, like, which is insane because there's generally 1 or 0 of those moments in every Marvel movie. And this time it was like,
oh, when Loki says we've got a Hulk.
Yeah.
That's another one right there. Loki using the line that Iron Man used in the first event.
Him.
So good.
I thought
so
that was really great. Really loved that. I really loved butt hurt Hulk over losing a fight.
Yeah.
It was like my favorite trope for the rest of the movie was that Bruce Banner keeps trying to bring Hulk out. Hulk keeps appearing for a second and then yelling no and then going back in. And the whole reason is because he lost a fight and he doesn't want to lose again because he's a butthurt child.
Yeah, he's which is just like amazing because it's exactly what my toddler acts like now. Yes. When something is wrong, there's no way. You're not going to change his mind.
So I thought that was great. Really loved the final battle in Wakanda. Fucking phenomenal. Just so good. Like so good. Loved the Doctor Strange, Iron Man, Star-Lord interactions. I could have had a billion of those. They were fantastic. Everything Spider-Man said was like, you know, I wasn't sold on Tom Holland.
Yeah.
Originally when he got cast, not because I thought he was bad, just because I was like, oh, it kind of felt like another Tobey Maguire. Like, it just felt like we've had the same Spider-Man kind of three times now. But I think he's so perfectly Peter Parker, that I love it. His interchange with Iron Man, his interchanges with Doctor Strange. And he's so good at it that the joke that gets ruined in the trailer, where he's like, oh, hi, I'm Peter. And then Doctor Strange goes, Doctor Strange. And he goes, oh, we're using fake names. I'm Spider-Man. It's a good joke. And it was in the trailer. And usually when a joke gets re-thrown at me after seeing it in the trailer, I usually don't laugh at it. And I laughed again in the movie. And I was just like, God damn it. He's really good at delivering those lines. So I think those were probably my highlights, which is the whole movie.
That's kind of how I feel too, man.
But yeah. How about you? Was there anything I left out?
I snuck out and saw it a second time because, you know, I had such a great time seeing it. The first time I was like, I absolutely have to see it in the theater at least once before it's gone.
Yeah.
Obviously all the big moments where you have these big entrances, the Thor entrance being just so fantastic after everything he's been through. And I think what a lot of viewers don't really realize is for Thor, you know, he had been in hell with Surtur,
yep.
And then a couple minutes later, he was, you know, his dad died, and a couple minutes later, he was thrown into slavery and then had to fight the Hulk, and then Asgard exploded, and then 10 minutes after Asgard exploded, Thanos boards a ship and kills everybody and kills his brother. So it's like, for Thor, the end of Ragnarok to, you know, the moment that he gets his new axe is like a week.
Yeah,
you know, and that's nuts. Like, that's a lot for a character to go through. I thought his arc was really, really great in the film.
Yeah.
And I never thought that that Thor would be one of my favorite Avengers or favorite characters in these Marvel films. But especially after Ragnarok
Thor and Star-Lord.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful. That scene is so brilliant. How he starts speaking like in this cheesy old English accent. It's just so... Like, poor.
Are
like,
you lowering your voice? No. Yes, you are. You're lowering your voice. No, I'm not.
Was so brilliant. And that's another thing. This film is very, very dark, but there's so much great comedy in it and so many wonderful pop culture references and just, you know, really like tiny little things that I didn't catch up seeing the second time. There's a scene like if you pay attention to Mantis in the film. She's so freaking weird. It's wonderful because she's in the background in a lot of these shots. And there's a scene where they're approaching the Asgardian wreckage. And they Star-Lord tells the rest of the crew to look angry. And Mantis is all the way in the back, but she makes this really weird-ass face.
Yeah.
And it's just brilliant and funny. The other things like that really stood out to me is I really... paid attention to the performances the second time around and just how great, and this is the only reason why these films have worked as well as they have is because the casting is like the most perfect thing ever.
Yeah.
And I'm not the biggest Iron Man fan. Like, he's great in the films, but he's never been my favorite character just because I'm not a huge fan of like the smug, smug cocky dude. It always bugs me. But watching Downey's performance in this and watching him with Tom Holland, like this father-son relationship and him worrying about Pepper and if Pepper is having a baby and like all the responsibility and all the mistakes that he's made along the way are kind of coming to a head in this film.
Yeah.
And you just see this like pain in Robert Downey Jr.'s acting throughout everything. So he can't be as cocksure and as douchey as he normally is because it's like, oh, this is the real deal. Like, everything is, you know, everything is really coming to a head here, which is great. And I 100% agree that the way they split off the teams and you end up with these weird pairings like Thor with like Rocket Raccoon and and Groot. And then you have like freaking on Titan, the film ends with Nebula and Iron Man together. What? Two unlikely characters from all of the MCU to like be standing on a planet together, Nebula and Iron Man, you know, and like, what the hell? And it's just, all of that was just so brilliant. And you know, it's all because of what's going to happen in the next film, but so many great scenes. I I think my favorite scene that stands out to me right now, Battle of Wakanda was awesome, just you know, for sheer scale. But Cap's first appearance when the train goes by and he steps out of the shadows, you're just like, oh, they're like, there's our boy, you know.
And it's Civil War Cap too. It's the black outfit and everything, the shield cap.
Watching that was a great team moment. Like Cap's like Falcon, Black Widow, and Cap just like lay waste to you know, like Proxima Midnight, and it's just like so good, and it just shows like how good they are, because like you're thinking like, okay, well, the Avengers are Earth's Mightiest Heroes, but Thanos is the Black Order have annihilated entire planets worth of other heroes, but then they face off against the Avengers and they all die except for Thanos, which is just crazy. So
I had a friend asking about so at the very end Captain Marvel gets announced from Nick Fury. He texts her he pages her on a pager, from what I gathered, which, okay. Very 90s, got it. But so, you know, my friend watched the movie with us. We walked out and he was like, so if she exists, why wouldn't they just call her right away? And I was like, well, this is how comic books work, for one. I was like, I go, I always call it the Thor problem. And he's like, what's that? And I'm like, well, if you're, you know, if you're like a regular dude, if you're the Punisher, and you're having a real problem with some other bad guy who's just got guns and shit, like, why not just call Thor? Who can just come and kill the guy immediately and be like, well, there you go. And then like leave. He's like, oh. And I'm like, that's just kind of how it always works. I was like, but also, you know, maybe Fury's plan was to wait till it was absolutely necessary, you know, depending on where she is, which we'll find out in her movie, assuming we'll find out in her movie where she is right now. But
I hope so.
But I'm excited about that. That got full cheers in my audience. I don't know about you, but everybody screamed.
I was very excited. I had heard that Samuel L. Jackson is notorious for misdirection, but he said he's not in them. I'm not in those movies. And he's like, he even went on social media and said, how could they not have me in these movies? So he was kind of like, you know, making people believe that he wasn't in them. So I was very excited to see Nick Fury again and Maria Hill. I thought that was great.
So real quick, before we check out, what are your predictions here? They're going to get the time stone and go back to when, or are they going to get the whole gauntlet? Cause my thing was everybody was like, the gauntlet's destroyed, but weren't all the gems still in the gauntlet?
It looks like it all kind of got fused, like he got all burnt up and it's all kind of stuck, like part of him, so they can't get the gauntlet off, but he was able to use the space stone to get out of there. So I think he may not be able to use all the gems together. Right. So they might be kind of like malfunctiony, but I honestly don't know. You know, predictions for what the next film's going to consist of. I love how it's the original Avengers team. So everyone that when he does his magical snap, all the newer characters fade away and the original team is left behind, which is going to give us a really fun way to say goodbye to some of these characters next year. So we'll have Thor, Thor, Captain America, Iron Man, Hawkeye, presumably Black Widow, and Hulk. And so we have basically the whole original Avengers comic number one team. And then if they add Ant-Man and the Wasp, that is the whole Avengers number one team. Thor 2, I don't know if I mentioned.
That's the Ultimates team too, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Yeah,
I think
that's the OG Avengers, like sans Hawkeye. But I think that's great that they're going to have this big adventure. I, God, man, it's really hard to say. Like, there's so many theories about what the Soul Stone really does, because it was the Soul Stone that was that vaporized everybody.
Right.
I don't think it's going to be a time travel-y thing, though. I think
I don't either.
Yeah, I think the Russos are kind of too good for that.
Yeah.
And that's such a cop out to be like, we're just going to go back in time and make it not happen.
I said this too, and a bunch of people were like, no, they're just going to use the time gem. And I was like, I feel like they're going to use the Soul Stone. Like, that's the stone that we don't know anything about. Like, the time gem seems cheap. And also, the only person who would really be able to control it is gone, is Doctor Strange.
Absolutely. And I don't think the time stone, from what I've seen, can do entire like worlds. I think it can do like a localized area. Cause in Doctor Strange, he does like a couple blocks in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And then when Thanos does it to Vision, he only changes time for that little pocket. Like even Scarlet Witch, who's 5 feet away, wasn't impacted by the time shift. So I don't think that that you can do entire civilizations of people traveling through time. I don't think that's how it works, but it's all fake, so who knows.
Who knows?
But I don't know, man. Like I said, I'm really excited to see the old team on a mission. I think that they're going to, now that Thor can teleport, I think there's obviously going to be another massive standoff between them and Thanos. But I think it's going to be some sort of big sacrifice that the original Avengers have to make to bring everybody else back. And that's the way that they'll do something like these, you know, people need to stay behind in the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
So they're not, you know, skeletons or like, you know, like burnt up or anything like that. It's like, okay, they can come back in 12 years and sell $1 billion worth of tickets in 12 years.
Yeah. I mean, my theory is it's Cap. Cap's going to go, I think, and possibly Iron Man. Although I could see Iron Man retiring and still being around and Cap dying. I just that's his whole character, man. That's the whole thing that they've built with him this entire time, is that he's gonna die. Like, the dude's gonna go at some point.
Yeah.
So, and then I think they'll replace him with my possible theory is replace him with Falcon, because rewatching the earlier movies, which I did most of them before I saw Avengers, Falcon's way more badass than I remembered him being. And he's a great character too. And his introduction with Captain America is good. And I like the whole bit, and I have a feeling they did it in the comics, and I could see them doing it in the movies as well, but we'll see. Who knows? We definitely don't. So that's, this is all conjecture. But yeah, I agree. I don't see it being the Time Stone. I see it being the Soul Stone or some combination therein. And I see major sacrifice happening for sure.
Yeah.
So
me too.
We'll see. And then there's also the theory about whether Gamora will come back, because she died so early in the movie. And then my only outlier there is that they teased Adam Warlock in the second Guardians, and he's another crazy powerful OP character who could alter time and space as well. So they may leave Gamora hanging, and she may be the thing they're going after in the third Guardians, which I think
they're going to do a search for Spock kind of situation.
Yeah.
If Nebula's still alive, I think Nebula will be on the ship with the Guardians.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to go looking for Gamora, which is a wonderful plot for,
I think it'd be good. Yeah.
For a third movie. So, good stuff. And I heard that James Gunn was heavily involved with the script writing, for Infinity War. Down to the point where, I don't know if you heard this, but this is super sad. And if you're listening to our viewers and listeners may cry for this, but this is, apparently he writes all of Groot's lines in actual English.
Oh yeah. Yeah. His headcanon. Yeah.
Yeah. So he writes all of Groot's lines. And so he was writing the Groot lines for Infinity War, and the scene where Rocket and Groot, and Groot's fading away from the Infinity Snap, Groot looks up to Rocket and he says, "I am Groot." And Rocket starts to kind of cry, but what Groot was saying was "Dad?"
Yeah.
Oh, it just gives me the nerd chills and makes me so sad. that little Groot sees Rocket as his dad is just so brilliant and sad. But anyway, so all good stuff. I guess my closing thoughts are, this movie is fantastic. It's better than we deserve, and it's unbelievable that something like this can even get made to this level. So
I agree. I thought it was super wonderful. I'm going to go see it again, probably with my movie pass, hopefully this week.
Do it. Do it.
Yeah.
Good stuff. I think that is the end of the show, sir.
We did it.
We did it.
A whole show.
Yeah, we did. Hopefully it actually recorded.
otherwise, if not, then you and I had a great chat.
Great conversation for an hour and 20 minutes. Hey, thank you guys for listening to our show. This is episode 307 of the Rated NA podcast. You can follow us on social media, and that's Nerd Appropriate on Twitter. We have / Nerd Appropriate on Facebook and / Nerd Appropriate on Twitch TV. You can also email us directly if you have a question or a comment, nerds@nerdappropriate.com. And we will do our best to have as many episodes out as possible. Definitely go back and check out our PAX content. We had some great interviews with some fun folks, including Kamina from Florence. So,
indeed. Go do it.
Go do it. And as always, thanks for listening.
Thank you, guys. That was bad. Delete all that. Thanks, Scott, guys.
just keep that part, Scott.
It's late. I'm sleepy. Those words just came out of my head. I don't know.
I gotta go do dishes. Ugh.